Blog Talk Radio.
Blessings from the Darkness is an eclectic collection of writings by a talented and diverse group of writers and published authors in dedication of and in support of our dearest friend, the award-winning and best-selling author Yvonne Mason and her son. All sales of this anthology, present and future, are donated to her in support of her son, who at the time of this publication has been ill and out of work and struggling to support his family due to an undiagnosed illness. Yvonne has been an inspiration, selflessly supportive, and a dear friend to many aspiring writers and indie authors. She believes in paying it forward, offering her knowledge and insights and friendship to kindred souls. Yvonne has a saying, she threatens to let loose the flying monkeys when there is wrongness in the lives of those near and dear to her. So after bringing us together for a successful and fun-filled double anthology by Yvonne, including notable authors and first-time published writers, and after learning about the continued troubles of her son and his family, we came together as such monkeys to fly free, far, and wide in what we do best, G.L. Lentz. This book can be purchased at Amazon.com, Amazon Kindle, Barnes & Noble, and www.blackbedsheetbooks.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, it is Wednesday night. I am your host, Yvonne Mason. This is Off the Chain, and of course that was a piece of shameless promotion. But it is for a good cause. Yes, my son is still sick. We still don't know what is wrong with him, and he is still out of work. And believe it or not, ladies and gentlemen, he has been denied his Social Security, his disability. So, yes, that book is very important, and everything does go to him and his family. I don't care if it's $5, $20, or $100. The royalty checks all go to him to take care of his family. He also has a son who is an insulin-dependent diabetic and has been since he was about 2 years old. So this family really needs your prayers, your support, your love, and if you're so inclined, the purchase of the book so that he can continue to take care of his son and himself. Now, this week is just started off with a bang. If we get cut off, ladies and gentlemen, no, I didn't hang up on my guest. The power went out because we are having storms down here that are a prelude to our hurricane season. So if you lose us, that is why. My power's been knocked off and I can't get it back. This show, I am so grateful for this show. I am so grateful for the listeners. I am so grateful for my guests. And I am so grateful for the opportunity to bring you indie artists, business people, entrepreneurs, people with a platform. Because they all have a voice, and this show allows them their voice. We have now reached my personal goal of over 20,000 listeners for this show. We're almost to 8,000 listeners just on Blog Talk Radio. My next goal before the end of the year is 25,000, and that's not an unrealistic goal. I said when I started this show back last July that if I was able to make a difference in one person's life, then this show is worth everything that we put into it. Now, this show is not successful because of me, ladies and gentlemen. I'm just the messenger. This show is successful because of you, the listener, and my guest, who tolerate me, and I can twist their arm and tweak their ear, and they agree to come back time after time. I don't know. Maybe they're sadistic. I have no idea. But they appear to enjoy coming back, and I love having them. And it's fun to get to know these artists on a personal level because they are their brand. Their product is not the brand. My guests are their own brand. And when you, the listener, understand where my guest is coming from, their passions, their projects, their charities, their failings, their fears, their successes, then when you go and buy their product, you understand more about the product. And I have to give a big shout-out to Australia because Australia, you guys rock so much. Y'all are 75% of my listening audience on Blog Talk Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, we are heard in over 64 countries now, countries I've never even heard of. And so, yes, my guests are getting out there. They're getting out there on a platform that that most people just dream about, especially my indie authors and musicians, because if you're not with a huge traditional publishing company or a huge music production company, the chances of you being heard worldwide are slim and none, even with the internet. So this is a avenue for my guests to be heard around the world, and believe me, ladies and gentlemen, they are heard around the world, and I am so proud of them. So with that being said, one of my favorite people in the world who has a daughter who I just absolutely, if I could get my hands around her, would just squeeze the daylights out of her because she's cute as a bug. He has a beautiful, beautiful wife who just glows from the inside out. And I am so honored that this young man continues to come on my show and continues to tolerate my interviewing him. His name is Ian Bush. He is an author, and he is a Michigan native. He has been writing stories for 13 years. His first self-published novella, This Story Has Soul, was released in 2010. He is the winner of the Two Moon Press 2012 contest for his novella, Wishes for the World Around You. His work can be found in the anthology Satan's Holiday, which is an anthology I put together, Shadows and Light, number 1 and 2 and 4, A Merry Scary Christmas, which was also an anthology that I put out, Special Hauntings 2, Don't Look Back, and God Love This Man. He is one of the contributors to Blessings from the Darkness, the book that I just told you about, Devolution Z and 47-16, A David Bowie Tribute Anthology. He also co-authored a novella, Guidelines for Immortality, with Ron Brown, and he can be found at Facebook, www.facebook.com/IanBush.author, or on Amazon, and all you'll do is go to Amazon and look up his name. And you can also email him at iancbush@gmail.com. Welcome back, my friend.
Thank you for having me again. Oh, I'm doing good. I'm really excited to be back.
Yeah, it's been a minute or two.
It has.
You're going to have to quit waiting so long. But you've been so busy with the baby and with Samantha and with doing your thing and having so much fun. So
it's always nice to come back on the show and do something I like, too. So I've definitely been really busy, and I like hanging out with Sam and Winnie, but I always got to go back to my roots. I gotta write. I gotta go on shows every once in a while.
That's true, because we don't want people to forget you. In fact, ladies and gentlemen, this is the young man that stole my microphone and interviewed me on my own show, which we had so much fun doing.
We did.
And it's gotten rave reviews. You do a good job. We should have you come co-host this show with me a couple of nights.
I'd love to. That'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it would be. Okay, well, tell me what night from Wednesday through Saturday that you have a spare hour, and I'll throw you in as a co-host, and we'll just run with this.
That'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, just so after the show, just send me some nice Avon. I'm good this time, and I'll just throw you in. We'll have lots of fun.
Oh, yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, he is an excellent interview. I'm going to tell you what this, and I thought I was good at digging up dirt on people. This young man knows how to dig. Did a real good job.
Now, I was trying.
Yeah, no, you didn't try. You literally, I've never had anybody that researched that thoroughly, and I'm grateful for that, because you not only went back and looked up my bio and my websites, you actually listened to other podcasts I had done,
mm-hmm.
which is a sign of a great host. So,
well, thank you.
Now, you are getting back into writing finally.
Finally, yes.
You're working on something new, but we're not going to talk about that right now. No, y'all can't. We're not going to do that right now. We're going to wait a little while because y'all know how I am. I save the best for last. What can I say? But the last thing that I remember we talked about, or one of the last things we talked about when I interviewed you, was the disc golf. Tell these folks what that is, because that's still just, I still can't wrap my head around it.
So disc golf, frisbee golf, is a sport that you have a frisbee, and they're all various weights and various types, and they have disc golf courses. If you ever drove by and you saw a basket just randomly sticking out of the ground, that's called a pin, and that's how you play disc golf. So you take your disc and you tee off a tee pad. They're usually concrete or rubber or something like that, and you try to get your disc into a pin in as few throws as possible, and it's golf rules. So, you know, if you get it in one throw, automatically that's an ace, and you want the lowest score, obviously. So we've been pretty busy with that, trying to get back into the season. I fortunately have 3 tournaments coming up in June that I signed up for, so looking forward to doing that and getting back into that again.
Now, is this thing countrywide, or is it just local to your area, or do you bounce from state to state?
It's actually pretty nationwide. Some states have more popularity than others. I know back in my home state of Michigan, they have a tournament almost every weekend somewhere in the state. So when you're home, you can just kind of, there's a website that you can look at, and it shows all the tournaments and where the city's at, and they talk about the disc golf course. So it's real popular where I came from. It's a good community, too. Everyone looks out for each other. So it's great. You get to meet people. You get to go outside, enjoy the outdoors. You know, and it's a lot of fun when you're with somebody, and it's a lot of science and a lot of art behind it. You know, and it's something you can do pretty much no matter how old you are. And I think that's why I like it so much, because, you know, there's a lot of sports, football, soccer, those types of sports that you can't really do when you get up there in age. But disc golf you can do all the way up until the final day, and I think that's pretty neat.
How did you get involved in it?
So I had some friends who were trying to get me to go out and play, and I kept telling them it seemed silly trying to throw a piece of plastic into a pin, and it didn't seem like my thing. And so my friends, knowing what type of person I was, they're like, you know what, I bet you'll like it. And if you bet me, it's on. I'm gonna do it. So
just to prove that you were right the first time and you didn't like it, right?
Right, exactly. I'll be like, oh, I'll show you I hate this game. Oh, let's go. Wasting my time. So we went out and I loved it, and it started turning into a once a weekend thing where, you know, we would go to school throughout the week, and then we'd meet up, or we'd, you know, travel. And then when we were in college, that's the thing that kept us together, was going out and playing disc golf. And obviously when we were younger, we could play a lot more rounds in a day. I think I remember one day we played, I think, 5 rounds at 4 different courses in our hometown. So that was a good, whatever, 5 times 18 is. I'm not real good with math, I'm sorry. But that
was,
that's
90 holes of disc golf.
Yeah, there you go. See, you're better at math than I am. I'm happy about that. I gotta find a calculator. I'm all frustrated. I can't do it.
if you only knew, my darling friend, if you only knew. The teachers took my writing away from me because I couldn't do math in grammar school.
We actually talked about that last time as well.
Yes, we did. I just want to tell them thank you for telling me that. Now, you also are a firefighter. Now,
yep,
is this a volunteer firefighter? Are you paid for it? And how in the world did you get into fighting? Because my son-in-law was a volunteer firefighter before he moved
mm-hmm.
out of the county he was living in. And I know what he had mm-hmm. to go through. He's also a first responder, so I know the training he had to go through. How did you get involved in it?
So it started out when I was about 14 or 15. I was dating someone who her father was a lieutenant at a fire station. And I kind of was the duteous scanner listener. You know, when he had a call, I'd sit there and listen to their pages and you know, just think it was so cool that at a moment's notice they're going out there and they're doing what they need to do for people at their worst, you know, trying to make it a little bit better for them at their worst moments. So he saw that I had an interest and he brought me to the fire station, and that was hooked ever since. So when I came out to where I'm at right now, I started calling around. I said, you know, I've been wanting to be a volunteer firefighter since I was like 14 or 15. And I finally found an area that would that I could work in. You obviously have to live in an area that you can respond to in a somewhat timely manner. And so I finally moved into that area, and they hired me on, and I've been doing it ever since.
And what people don't understand, that even as a volunteer, you still have to go through an extensive training course, because you can't just run into a burning building and say, I'm going to save everybody without knowing what the heck you're doing.
Right, right. So we do go through specialized training. We do a lot more in-house training, but we do go to fire schools, and we take any training opportunity that we can in the surrounding departments. That's really neat about this brotherhood as well, is that, you know, if we have something that's coming towards us, we open it up to other departments so they can come and learn too, because we know that, you know, if we're helping out our brothers and sisters to the right and the left of us, then that makes us a pretty strong force. So it's really a tight-knit little brotherhood. You know, it's definitely, you know, you got to earn that title. And once you do earn that title, you're definitely among friends. So.
And ladies and gentlemen, what a lot of people don't understand, when someone says, I am a volunteer firefighter or I'm a volunteer first responder, that is exactly what it means. They will leave a job they are getting paid for to go fight a fire or to go be a first responder at a wreck or a fire or whatever. They don't get paid for that. They put their life on the line simply because it's a service, and they want to take part in that service and give back to their community. Would that be a fair statement, Ian?
That's fair. And, I mean, it's 24 hours, too. So
exactly.
You can be eating dinner with your family, and luckily, you know, I appreciate what you said about Sam. I think equally about her like you do. I think she's awesome. That's not just trying to win brownie points on the air, but you know, there's been a lot of times that the call came out or, you know, tones dropped, and I looked at her and I, you know, gave her the look, and she's like, yeah, go, you know, it's more important that you go. It stinks that you got to go, but, you know, she's been really supportive about it, and she definitely knows how much I love it and I enjoy it, and it's definitely one of my passions.
And she would want someone to be there for her if you weren't there and there was a fire, an emergency, and all you had was volunteer firefighters or first responders. She would want that same reaction from another volunteer who was willing to drop everything to come take care of her.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. She definitely understands that aspect of it as well. So.
Gotta love her. She's a sweetheart.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, she is.
Now, this is something that I don't think we've talked about, but you said that you won the PVSM for the third year in a row. What is the PVSM?
So the PVSM is the Presidential Volunteer Service Medal. And so if you meet the criteria, it's based on age and it's based on number of hours volunteered, they will award you a medal from the president with a signed letter from him stating, you know, how much he appreciates you volunteering in the community. So I won gold for the third time.
Well, congratulations, my friend.
Thank you.
Wow.
I was fortunate that I could spread the wealth, too. The second year I won it, I got it for some other people as well. And then the third year, I helped somebody pretty much spread the wealth again. I helped him get the award for other people too. So I definitely wanted to help others out and, you know, get a lot of us up there instead of just me. So it was definitely really humbling to get somebody else up there as well.
You know, you're teaching little Winnie good ethics.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to do good for her, so.
You are. There is no doubt in my mind. Now, we had, before the show, we briefly discussed Chris Connell in the art world, and I made the statement that your age group and my son's age group, my son is 45. He grew up on the artists that I listen to, the Temptations, you know, the old country and western, but he also brought in his own age of artists that were coming in as he was growing up. So my son's very well rounded in music. And we were talking about the fact that the artist of my growing up years, the 50s, the 60s, didn't drop dead at 20, 30 years old. Some of them are still around, and they're in their blooming 80s. Whereas the artist of your age group, you keep losing them, like Chris Connell. What's going on? What's different?
So I can't, you know, I haven't really researched what happened to Chris Cornell too much. I just can't. Like we talked before the show, I'm still kind of impacted by his passing. I've still been listening to his music, you know, for this entire week, just kind of trying to find the little hidden gems that maybe he put in there for us when he moved on. And, you know, I grew up on that music with my dad, so that's where it really hit me the hardest, is that's the piece of my childhood with my dad that I shared with him, was us listening to Audioslave and Soundgarden and, you know, rocking out to that. And, you know, so I like I said, I didn't really research too much about his problems. I know he had some, I believe, alcohol and drug issues. Again, I don't want to really slander his name with false information, but, you know, I think it's the time change. I really do. In my heart of hearts, I think we are in this instantaneous gratification phase, if you will, where we always have to push new music and find new ways to be relevant. I don't think it was like that back then. Now, obviously, I can't speak on past generations. I wasn't around at that time, but I feel like past generations, they understood the determination and they understood the grind and, you know, the importance of keep going because it's going to be out there, where, you know, today you can upload a video to YouTube and be a sensation and be forgotten about 3 months later by another YouTube video. And again,
that's
by no means I'm not saying that's what happened to Chris Cornell. You know, I never spoke to him. I never asked him his life story, but, you know, I think that pursuit of always trying to push more, and you see more bands today break up due to inner band struggles too. And I think the generational grind of I have to produce more music and everything has to be good and I have to stand on the shoulders of these giants that we loved growing up, I think that's a lot more stressful.
So if a up and coming artist was self-confident enough to say, I'm going to make my own path, and live with that decision, do you think that they would be in it for the long haul, understanding that drugs, alcohol, loose women, and I say that in quotes, ladies and gentlemen, don't get excited, loose women, debauchery, the underbelly of the art world, and the art world does have an underbelly. If they could stay away from the underbelly of the art world and stay focused on their craft and know that they're in it for the long haul, and you're going to have valleys and mountains and you're going to have things that aren't as successful as others, but if you keep your eye on the journey, we would stop losing a lot of these artists at such a young age.
I mean, unfortunately, not point out your generation, but you guys have a 27 club as well. I mean, we're talking Jim Morrison, Jimi Hendrix,
yep.
Janis Joplin. So I think kind of, and I like how you summarize it with the underbelly, I think it's a balance, because if you're not in tune with the underbelly, you're not going to reach your people. I'm thinking, you know, lately I've been really rocking out to Pink Floyd again, Dark Side of the Moon. I don't know why, it's just something that's been in my head and just been wanting to listen to it. But I think an artist needs to remember there's a balance that they have to maintain. While they can explore those artistic routes, they have to remain grounded and remember that the underbelly isn't where you need to be all the time, be it, as you described it, you know, sex, drugs, rock and roll, alcohol, partying, all that. You know, you need to remember to do it. Now, I'm not, see, that sounds bad. I'm not advocating drugs and drinking and alcohol and all that, you know, but I'm just saying you need to live a little so you can reach your people. You don't want to sing something that nobody else feels, resonates, or understand, you know?
And sadly, I have to say that my generation, and going back to Hendrix and Joplin, and mm-hmm. that group of artists, they were looking for something to jump out at the masses, because we had just come out of the 40s, we had just come out mm-hmm. of the 50s, and then you had flower power in Vietnam, and drugs was flowing into this country like the Mississippi flows downhill. You couldn't keep the drugs out of this country, because what happened, mm-hmm. sadly, some of our servicemen were making money hand over fist, bringing that stuff into the country. I mean, they weren't liked anyway when they came home, so they just figured they'd make a killing on drugs anyway. And that's when drugs have been around for years. Don't get me wrong, ladies. And drugs have been around since the beginning of time. I mean, laudanum, for crying out loud, that they drank in the 1800s and 1500s and 1600s. But what happened is in the 60s, the music itself exploded, and when it exploded, so did all of the underbelly. It all bubbled up like a volcano, and yeah, we lost Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, Elvis overdosed on prescription drugs at 40 years old in 1973-74. So it was like all of a sudden, here all these artists are just like now in a cycle, dying from drug overdoses, committing suicide, alcohol overdoses, you name it, all because they became too famous too fast, or they were beginning to lose their glow and there was nowhere else to go but to spiral down.
Well, and I think that we forget that these people who we hold in high regard, who are very successful, that they're people too. You know,
exactly.
I can't condone anything that anybody has done in the past. You know, obviously it's not my life, but I think we forget that they're people too. You know what I mean?
And
so there's probably drug overdoses. Exactly. There's probably drug overdoses that happen every day around your community, and you don't even know what's happening. But when this big rock star has a drug overdose, then, you know, it's an epidemic, and it's, you know, rock and roll is all about drugs and yada yada. But they forget that even in their small community, these people who aren't in the limelight are doing the same thing and dying the same way. So I think
in the state of Ohio, just heard it on the, speaking of that, in the state of Ohio, just heard on the news today that there is a city or one county in the state of Ohio that has so many opioid overdoses that the coroner has run out of refrigeration space to put the body, so they've had to bring in refrigerated trucks, semis, to put these bodies in until they can get, and most of them are indigents, probably runaways, probably homeless, And there's nobody to claim their bodies, so these bodies sit in these refrigerated trucks until they can find a pauper's field to bury them. That's sad.
Well, it's kind of a, it's just a struggle, you know. Addiction's a hard, hard thing to beat, and I really tip my hat to those who beat it. You know, I've heard a lot of stories of people who've overcame some pretty big obstacles. I've heard stories of people who didn't overcome their obstacles, but it's still, every story that I hear is very interesting to listen to and inspiring, and you know, sometimes it's just a good reminder of how fragile and precious life can be, you know?
And that brings us to the story you've been working on.
Yep.
See how we just segue into this stuff, ladies and gentlemen.
Right.
We are. We've been at this a while. But before we segue into the story you've been working on, real quick, because I think this is such a neat thing, why is college not important?
Come again?
Why is college not as important as we say it is, or as we perpetrate it to be, or as we preach? You know, you can't go out in the world and make a living unless you have a college degree.
That segue was a good segue, because I was grabbing my papers, and when you said that, I'm like, what? What'd you just say? What's going
on?
Well,
I want to talk about this real quick, and then we'll talk.
Yeah,
more
right. You got me.
I'm
that
bad
was
like
good.
That
was good. We just complimented each other and how well we danced and banter, and then you stepped on my foot, Yvonne. No, I'm just kidding. So, you know, for me, college, not to downplay anybody who has a college degree, I have an associate's. I'm working my bachelor's right now. I'm about 68 or 70% done. I think we get too hung up on degrees, because I've met a lot of people who have some pretty good street smarts that are still more in tune and intelligent than people who has degrees and, you know, you name it. And so I think we get so hung up on that pursuit of college that we forget that there's certificates available and there's, you know, other avenues. There's trades that you can get into. I think that's something I'm definitely going to stress to my daughter, is that, you know, you don't have to go to college if you don't want to. College isn't it for everybody. I hate that everyone
right.
pushes college on people, because some people, it's just not for them. And
they need
it's
a trade school. They're better with their hands.
Right. It's just an expensive route for someone who doesn't want what they're getting. And I understand that. So, you know, while a college degree is great, as long as you're progressing in life, be it a certificate or a trade or whatever you're doing, I think that should have more importance than a diploma. I really do.
You're a man after my own heart. My sister was one of the smartest people I knew. I mean, she worked for Bell South for 30 years, and she was a college graduate. But on some level, she was one of the dumbest people I ever knew, because she had no common sense.
Right.
And I say that with love. She was
right. Well,
people like my son would never have made it in college. He has a learning disability. But he works well with his hands. He could have learned a trade. As it was, he was a truck driver for 20 years, and he loved it. He was an over-the-road truck driver. You don't get a college degree to drive a truck, because that's street smart, common sense.
Right.
Now, let's segue back into your story, because I'm excited to read it. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we do things like this. So read your story.
The dance is back. We're good. We got our rhythm back.
Yeah, well, there you go.
So I'm not going to go too much into what it is. I'm a really big believer in, if you give too much of your story, you say it so many times that you feel like you've already wrote it.
Yep.
So the quick synopsis is, there's a guy who used to work for the government, and he made a project that he really put a lot of love in, and that's actually my career field. Is I'm kind of a project manager in a way, so I build projects that, you know, I do. I put a lot of heart into it. So it always takes a little piece of me when it's done. And, you know, it's a big source of pride for me when it's actually functioning right and people are satisfied with the project at hand and they say, hey, you know, you create a good product. This is going to be something that we use for how many years? That's the biggest sense of fulfillment I get. So I kind of took that personal experience and wrote a book about how this project got out of hand and they kind of took his baby and, you know, he kind of got back at them. So the scene that I'm going to read to you, just wrote it a couple days ago, revised it real fast for the show, just to give you guys a little glimpse into how I write. And if you kind of like how I write, then definitely, you know, I have books out there like we stated before, but I really do feel like this one's going to be a good one. I'm really excited about it. I told a couple people about it and they said it's really original. So pretty much at the scene, he's done what he's done to his project. And now he's talking to his boss at the end, the dreaded conversation before the exit door. So it starts off as you are now dead in the eyes of the Social Security Administration, the IRS, and all other agencies. You are lucky this death is a document death and not a real one that everyone wants so badly right now, Mr. Knave spat. He sat erect in his chair, his eyes piercing me from across the desk. It is a hard world, Jake, even harder for those who are good like you. Your contributions are the only thing keeping you alive. Your merit is a shield in this agency. Your life, as you knew it, is now dead. What does my family know, I asked. Luckily for you, Mr. Knave reached into a box beside his desk as he spoke. You wanted to be cremated. We cleaned the ashes from the bottom of a furnace of a morgue. Your family and friends believe you perished in that fire. Mr. Knave pulled a cigar, ashtray, and cigar tip cutter out of a box. Convenient, I muttered. The only question I have before you are dismissed, Mr. Knave snipped off the cigar tip, is why did you kill Project Tracer? Everyone kills their baby, no matter how hard it is, even if it is better for the world as a whole, I said with determination. Mr. Knave walked over to the window, opening it. He lit a match I didn't see him have, striking the heel of his cigar, encircling his cigar around and around the yellow part of the flame. He inhaled deeply once the cigar was lit, exhaling with a sigh. You were so good at what you did, Jake. Morals have no place in this world, Mr. Knave continued staring out the window. I had no choice. My baby was out of my control. It changed into something grotesque, a machine I didn't and couldn't love. Mr. Knave nodded his head slowly. He walked back to his desk, opening a drawer. You are now Mr. Rose. Mr. Knave threw a folder on the table and nodded for me to look. I flipped the cover open and then saw an entire portfolio of identity items, social security cards, birth certificates, and a new driver's license.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah.
And when is this baby coming out?
it's been slow. it's been slow. I get bits and pieces, and then I get really excited, and then, you know, I really want to try and make this into an actual full-blown novel. We discussed last time, you were hoping I was going to write a novel sometime soon and try to venture out of the anthology world.
Yeah.
The only struggle that I have with writing a novel is I get really excited about certain scenes, and then, you know, in a novel, there's other scenes that you have to slow pace down, and it's not as fun to write. So I get kind of a chunky book going, if you will, where it's like a lot of fun, and then I get really bored with writing the in-between scenes, and then, oh, here's that other fun scene I was really excited about, and then, you know, you have to write a little bit more build-up, and you're like, man, I just want to get to that other scene that I really liked, and then more build-up, and so I'm trying to be determined and keep going, but novels are a different beast entirely.
Well, yes, they are, but that one has grabbed me. So now I got to know where Jake's going, how he's going to get there, and the end result. So you got to finish it now for sure.
That's what I was actually hoping for. I was like, you know, I'm going to go on Yvonne's show. I'm going to read a section, and people are going to, like, you know, hopefully email my Gmail and be like, hey, like, I need to know what's happening next, or are you still working on it? So that'll be my motivation for a bit.
And what the I want to know what the project is. I mean, come on. You just killed it, and I don't even know what it was.
Actually, the story idea actually came about, like I said, it was a personal story. You know, I've made a lot of projects where some of them are good, some of them were not so well put together, and sometimes they got taken from me, and it turned into something that I didn't like anymore, and, you know, I wish I could have killed it, but, you know, I couldn't, kind of thing.
So now you can. You can kill it in a book.
Right. And so that scene in particular, I was talking to somebody. You know, I like talking to people more than most, I guess. I have the gift of gab, and I like hearing people's stories around the workplace and all that. And somebody said, "Hey, did you know I was dead?" And I looked at him, and I'm all like, "If you're dead, this is a really weird conversation, because all four of us in this room see you right now, so I don't know what you're talking about." And I guess what happened was his wife got something in the mail. I don't remember the exact verbiage, but pretty much saying, you know, "We're sorry about your husband's death, and, you know, I'm sorry that he's deceased. Can you please send us a death certificate as soon as possible?" And I'm not kidding. Like, this is not the fiction right now. This is the real life.
Thing happened.
Yeah, and so he was trying to call and make, like, doctor's appointments and all that stuff, and people were thinking that he was doing, like, identity fraud against himself. Because,
oh, my goodness.
Well, the IRS and the Social Security Administration, all these people thought he was dead. And so essentially he had to prove to these people that he wasn't dead, which is ironic and hilarious to even think about, that, like, you know, you as a person, you've lived with your name for how many years, and now you're telling, you know, you're proclaiming to people how you're not dead. And he actually found out that this actually happens a lot, that these,
uh-huh,
you know, accidental death certificates or, you know, death notices go out, and then people actually, you know, show up as dead to these, all these agencies. I mean, they take care of a lot of people, so, you know, I don't discredit them or say that they're doing a bad job, but just the way he was telling me the struggle of him trying to prove his, you know, how he was still alive, it just really shocked me. So that's where that scene
came
from.
It's harder to prove he was still alive than it would be to prove he was dead.
Right.
Because on paper, he was not among the living.
Right. And he actually, this is going to affect him for a bit, because for his taxes and all that, you know, when somebody dies, I guess you claim them on your taxes.
Yes.
And so if he doesn't fix this before tax season, he has to claim he's dead just so the paper trail continues, so he can, like, still fight to become a person, I guess, if you will. Yeah, so it was a really weird conversation. Like, I've never heard of somebody being dead in the eyes of all these people. And so I thought, well, if it was easy enough for him to be dead in all the eyes of these people, why not a story character who, you know, backstabbed the company he was working for and destroyed their project, and they killed them off. So, but it was a documented death because, you know, he did a good job, and they didn't want to ruin his life. They just, you know, didn't want him to work there anymore. So
that is too funny. You got to finish it now. You do understand that, right? You have to finish it.
I'm definitely trying. Like I said, novels are a totally different beast.
Yeah, they are. And they will consume you, trust me. Mine consume me all the time. I was at a standstill with the one I'm working on, and I'm thinking, mm-hmm, now, where am I going to take this scene now, because I've already gathered the clan? Well, all of a sudden, the protagonist jumps up and says, my turn. So I had to add him to the dynamic of the book because he wouldn't shut up. I mean, I'm not ready for you yet, but he's saying, oh, yes, you are. So yeah, it'll happen, and once it starts, you won't be able to stop it.
Oh yeah.
So
luckily, I do a couple of projects. I always do two or three projects to kind of switch it up. So if I get stuck with one, I'll switch to another. So I'm working on a book for my daughter. It's called Wishes for Winifred.
Oh, really?
And so, yep. And so I took all the, and it's probably been done a million times, but it hasn't been done in my voice, so it's going to be unique. I took all the sizes of her when Sam was pregnant with her, and I put like humanistic traits to it. So one of them was like, you know, a piece of fruit or something. I said, you know, at whatever amount of weeks you were the size of a strawberry. And I hope that when you go through life, you just continue being sweet and, you know, bring joy to a lot of people and just kind of stuff like that and expounding on it. And it's kind of like half educational, but half still dedicated to her and things that I hope she remembers when she grows up. Cause somebody wrote a book like that for me, I probably would be a lot more intellectual than I am right now. So it wouldn't be so painful to write
you
down
were.
Like, man, I wish somebody told me that.
Well, you were extremely intellectual. It's one of the things
well,
I love
about
you.
Well, you know what I'm saying, though. If there was a book and I was like, oh, yeah, I got to remember to be, you know, sweet like a strawberry. Like, you know, I could have went through life a little bit less bruised, you know? No pun intended.
Well, but think about this, Ian. If your life experiences were defining moments in your life, they helped to shape the wonderful young man that you are, and so they were well worth it.
Oh, yeah, of course. That's
now,
the only way I learned, too.
Well, see, there you go. Is this one for Winifred going to be published? Are we publishing this?
You know, I don't know, honestly. I think at first I got a journal that I'm going to, a nice hardcover journal that I'm going to write it in and give it to her, and then maybe I'll retranscribe it into a Word doc and see if I can tailor it to other people. So, I mean, I bet you a bunch of people would like to read what I like to say to my daughter, but it'd be nice if I could tailor it to a wider audience. So.
Well, and that's what I was thinking, because young parents don't always know what to say to a little one. Mm-hmm. Sadly, when you go to the hospital and have a baby, you don't get a set of instructions. It just doesn't happen. It's a hit or miss, and if you fall down, you get back up. Something like that for a parent to be able to read to this child from day one and read it on up to the point the child can read it themselves is something that child can hold on to throughout its entire life. Like you said, if someone had done that for you as a child, you would have cherished it and learned from it and gained
mm-hmm.
wisdom from it. So I think you should do that.
I'm excited. So.
I'm very excited. What else have you got going on?
Come again? I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
I said, what else do you have going on in the writing world?
Oh, so there's that, and then there's the story section that I just read to you guys, and hoping to resurrect another project, and I'm still just kind of helping other people.
Are you putting any more short stories in anthologies?
You know, I got a couple of calls for submissions that I've been looking at lately. Our friend Kelly just put up another one for her first anthology coming for Christmas. So looking at that, seeing if there's something that I can spin up that would meet the criteria. So other than that,
well,
it's been pretty quiet.
The criteria for that's not very strong, so you would fit right in. In other words, it's got to be completely horror, it's got to be this, it's got to be that. Use your imagination.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Write something prolific and wonderful and
oh,
horror-driven.
Yeah. That's the goal.
Yeah, exactly. Because that keeps you out there.
I definitely, I need to get something out there. I haven't published something since I want to say 15, maybe I had one or two out in 16. The unfortunate thing is they all kind of start blurring together after a bit. You kind of forget which one was what year, and you got to go back and read it and be like, oh, yeah, that was that year. And Sam's better at the memory thing than I am. I vaguely remember what I did for breakfast a week ago, and she always told me, like, yeah, it was, you know, cereal and coffee. I'm like, oh, yeah, you're right.
Are you kidding? I don't remember what I had for breakfast today. So you too many other things are on my mind. I have too many other things going on. So you're going to work on the book. You're going to seriously think about transcribing the thing for Winifred into a book. I think it would be a beautiful, I would give it to a new expectant mother as a gift for her and that baby, because I love books anyway, but I would give that to her because she could start reading it to that baby before it's ever born.
Yeah. Kind of so like what you were saying earlier, Sam and I picked up on that, but they really don't have, I mean, they do. They have plenty of books on what to expect when you're expecting and, you know, all the different wise tales and tips and tricks, but, you know, I don't think any of those really help in the end. I think they just need to have a soft guideline saying, hey, you know, just remember to teach your kid to be a good kid.
Exactly, because every child is different. Every parent is different. Mm-hmm. And you can't cookie cut how to raise a child. It's, all the books in the world are not going to help a parent be a good parent. That has to come from within.
Mm-hmm.
And would you believe that we are almost out of time again?
I really can't. Every time we get on the show, it seems like it's faster and faster.
I know. It's because we have so much fun. So what I want you to do, because we didn't get to half of the questions we were going to talk about, so of course you're coming back for that. But that being said, tell me what nights are good for you to co-host, and I'll bring you on as a co-host with some of these guests, and we'll just have a gay old time because you are a great, great host. And
Thank you.
I'll send you the information, and you can work up your line of notes, and we'll just double-team these people.
Sounds like fun. I really appreciate the opportunity, you know.
Well, and it keeps you out there too, my darling, because you got to get this book finished now, because I want to know the who, what, when, where, and how, and whether he rises up or if he falls into the netherworld. And I know the reading audience is going to want that too. So,
oh, yeah.
But other than that, tell the folks where you can be found so they can hook up with you, so they can harass you about this book, so you'll get it finished.
So the email that you stated earlier, iancbush, iancbush at gmail.com, probably the easiest way to reach me right now. I haven't really been logging on to Amazon or anything else as of late. I've been more focused on writing. So if you send me an email, I promise I'll respond back to you and talk about anything you want. So I definitely enjoy it.
Also friend him on Facebook, because he is, I'm telling you, his stories about his beautiful, beautiful family will just warm your heart, especially if you're a mother or a new mother or a grandmother. And because they nicknamed the little one Winnie, I just feel so, she's just so special to me, because we've talked about this before. That was my grandmother's name, and she was like my second mother. So every time you put up Winnie did this or Winnie did that, it just brings memories of my precious grandmother, and I love you for that. Thank you so much.
Of course. I know you've been liking the devious child moments. Those are
she's
a lot of fun. So
you're paying for your raising, honey.
But I know, I appreciate you bringing me back on the show again, and we'll definitely team up on some people and have some fun shows. I really appreciate the opportunity, you know. I was excited to interview you, and you know, I just thought it was going to be a fun show to do, and so I'm not doing it just to stay relevant. I just want to talk to people and help them out too, just like you, you know.
Exactly. And you and I have fun. You're, ladies and gentlemen, I've never met this young man in person, but I have adopted him in my mind. He's like one of my children now. And he's got a very special place in my heart, and I want to see him succeed both in his personal life and in his craft. And in order to do that, we have to keep encouraging him because he does lead a very busy life. But even if you throw a short story out there and throw it up on Facebook for people to read, just to keep you out there, because to me that is very important. I don't want you falling away to the wayside. I'd hate to have to send the monkeys up there after you.
I kept them away this long, so I got to keep the good spree going.
There you go. Now, tomorrow night, ladies and gentlemen, our show at 8 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time, we will have author Ashley Fontaine on, and she is fabulous. I've known this young woman for many, many years, and she is absolutely marvelous. Some great things have happened to her, and I can't wait to have her on the show tomorrow night. Thursday night, author Betty Webb will be joining us. This is my first interview with her, but she has got some exciting things going on. And then on Saturday night, author Ellen Byron will be on here. This is also her first time with me. So the rest of the week is going to be jam-packed with authors and their craft and things that are going on, and I for one can't wait to interview them, and I know y'all can't wait to tune in and listen. Next Wednesday night at 8 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time, Sherry Rentzler will be on the show, and then I will be off the air until the following Wednesday night because I am going to be at a three-day event in Cocoa Beach. It is called the Space Coast Book Lovers Group, and there are about 73 indie authors that will be at this event, and the book signing itself will be Saturday from 10 until 1. It's at the International Palms Resort in Cocoa Beach. Go on my Facebook page and you can see the banner, and also go on the Space Coast Book Lovers website and get your tickets, because there's a lot of things going on. There's going to be a volleyball game. There's going to be a meet and mingle where we'll be on a panel taking questions. There will be a book library where you can go in and get a donated book and sit down and read it and then bring it to us and we'll sign it. I mean, just so much is going on up there. So go on and get your tickets. And Saturday's event, from the book signing from 10 to 1, is free. Other things cost, but you will not regret it. It's a wonderful mini vacation. You can get rooms there at the hotel. It's a huge resort. Bring your family, have a mini vacation, and come see us because we are a lot of fun. And my love, thank you so much for honoring me by spending an hour with me. It's such a joy talking to you. You always make me feel really good.
I appreciate it. I love talking to you, so we'll definitely be talking more soon, it sounds.
Oh, absolutely. There is no doubt. We will be doing this again. And ladies and gentlemen, hook up with Ian. Encourage him to finish this novel now that he's already whetted my appetite, and help him to live his dream. Support him in his dream. As I say at every end of every show, we are dreamers. And without us, our society and our world would be a very sad place, because dreamers are the ones that went to the moon. Dreamers are the reason we have books, televisions, the internet, telephones. Dreamers are the reason that we live in houses as opposed to caves. So if you know someone who is a dreamer, whether it's your spouse, your significant other, your mother, your father, your child, or even yourself or a friend, don't allow anyone to steal that dream. Do not give them permission. And in order to achieve greatness, don't ask permission. Just go out and do it. Live it, love it, learn it, embrace it, and I promise you, you will never be sorry. And if you want to be special, be special. Don't just say you want to be special, because you are special. We are all worthy, we are all important, and we all have a purpose. From the child who is challenged to to the adult who is up in age, we all have a purpose. So until tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, this is your host, Yvonne Mason, with Off the Chain, saying good night. Okay, you know what I'm going to do, my dear. This thing's going to go up in the archives, and I'm going to tag you in it, and then tomorrow I'll put it up in all the podcasts, and I'll tag you in it as well. So share.
Of course. We got to get you your goal.
Absolutely. Our goal. It's a group effort here. It's all of us. We are in this together.
Of course.
And I am going to say goodnight. I've got to go feed my darling husband, and let me know what nights you're available.
Of course.
That you would be free. You, as many nights as you want to come co-host, and we'll tag team them. I'll send you the information, and you do your little thing, and we'll have some fun.
Of course. You be safe down there. Let me know if you need anything, okay?
I will, sweetheart, and kiss the baby and kiss Miss Sam and tell them that they are the two most beautiful, wonderful women in the world.
I appreciate it. I, like we were saying earlier, I know I'm pretty lucky, so I'll definitely tell them you said that.
All right, darling, and I'll talk to you later on.
Yep, have a good night.
All right, honey, good night.
Bye.